Pressure is building for a parliamentary inquiry into the government's historic decision to adopt a nuclear submarine fleet. The Prime Minister says the new defence plan is all about keeping Australians safe and having a secure and stable Indo-Pacific region. But last week's announcement left a lot of questions unanswered, including the cost of these new vessels, the scope for local content and jobs, and whether Australia will retain a sovereign capability when it comes to naval shipbuilding. Kim Carr is a former industry minister with the Labor government. He's leading the charge for close parliamentary scrutiny of the submarines deal. Senator Carr, welcome back to Breakfast.
And good morning to you.
Kim Carr, Labor has already given bipartisan support for this new AUKUS agreement and the nuclear-powered submarines that are key part of it. Why does Parliament still need to take a look at the deal if there's bipartisan support?
Oh, well, the government's only provided a sketchy two-hour briefing without documents, and there remains an enormous number of questions yet to be answered. Just the sheer scale and the implications of this project clearly indicates that a bipartisan approach is no bad thing. But we've got a right to know more about what these technologies involve. We simply can't allow a government to proceed on this basis with a blank check. We need to know that this is really a 50-year arrangement. We need to ask questions on behalf of our grandkids as
sure.
to what the costs are and what the implications are for our region and for local industry and for our ability to maintain our sovereignty and our sovereign capability.
Surely okay, we've I want to come
something out of the pandemic on this regard.
Oh, I want to come back to some of those issues, but there is going to be an 18-month consultation process, we're told, between these three countries as they work this out. Is there any point having a Senate inquiry before those issues are thrashed out and they know what they're talking about? Because right now it just seems to be an agreement in principle, really.
Well, the problem we've got is that the government's always trying to rush these things, trying to rush us to accept things that they seem to know very little about themselves. They're always very big on the announcement. They're very light on the detail of what it actually means. And so I think the people and the parliament have got a right to know what's involved here, given this is the largest single procurement, the largest, biggest contract this country is going to have to face in its history. We've got a right to know that parliamentary scrutiny is involved in ensuring. Look, it's 80 years since John Curtin made his famous letter to the Melbourne Herald, making it clear that without inhibitions of any kind, we work with America. It's 80 years this Christmas. Now, I think it's appropriate, though, that we don't just assume that that involves us suspending all judgment as to what the implications are for us working with the United States on something as significant as this. We need to know what the trade implications are. We need to know what the issues are in regard to the region in terms of the possibilities of an arms race. What are the implications okay. if the Indonesians choose to go nuclear themselves? What are the implications in terms of what the Malaysians have said, the Pakistanis have said? What are okay. the implications for Australian shipbuilding, Australian companies, Australian capacity to build, to maintain and sustain these operations, the skills that we need.
Let's look at some of those now. You're a former industry minister. Let's look at cost for a start. Yes. You say we can't be giving a blank check and this is the largest, biggest contract. We don't actually know how big. The Defence Minister, Peter Dutton, concedes the procurement, quote, won't be cheap. I think he's also indicated before it'll be somewhere north of the $90 billion cost of the French project. Have you got any sense of what a nuclear sub costs these days?
Well, the British are talking about £2.2 billion per vessel for their procurement recently. Now, what we're seeing is these new generation of vessels, which will be much more expensive as they get larger, as they get more capable, as they are actually demanding more from those vessels in terms of their ability to do different things. So it's expected that they will be hideously expensive. Then on top of that, you're going to need to look at the sustainment costs, the cost of building the supply chains for the particular skills that you need to run this new technology. This is technology that hasn't been tried before in Australia. Mm-hmm. We need to know what skills we need in this country. We can't repeat the mistakes that we saw with the Oberon-class submarines. You know, during the Falklands War, we couldn't get spare parts because the British chose not to provide them. We simply have got to learn the lessons from the pandemic, where we've said in recent times how important it was to maintain a capacity, a sovereign capability. Now, those words do mean something.
What do they mean? When you talk about that, this is your major concern, retaining sovereign capability when it comes to naval shipbuilding and maintenance. If we lose that, what are the consequences? What's wrapped up in retaining sovereign capability?
We can't defend ourselves. We can't rely upon other people to do our job. We cannot be dependent upon other people to step up when we are in trouble. We have to be able to maintain our own vessels, our own defence capabilities. We cannot find ourselves back where we were before the Second World War. We cannot forget the lessons of history. One of the reasons we developed an auto industry in this country arose from our failure not to be able to build the necessary skills in this country when in a time of crisis. What we have learned through the pandemic, surely, is how important it is not to rely upon vulnerable international supply chain, highly fragile supply chains from overseas, because other countries will always look after themselves before they look after us.
So this goes to strategic capability, obviously, but also jobs, and training a workforce here. The US is obviously going to have a big say on how much of these subs Australia builds from scratch here, or whether we're just bolting together parts. And that has a huge impact on the jobs and the capacity of a workforce that was already starting to tool up in anticipation of the French build.
That's right. Just this week, they've laid off 400 people who are building the yard in Adelaide for the subs, the French contract. There were meetings that were held yesterday for the next group of workers that were supposed to go over to France, welders to go over to France. So the company's been completely blindsided by what's happened. The unions have been lied to, workers have been lied to, the supply chain companies have been lied to in this process. We cannot leave people in the lurch in this way. And we've got to understand that it takes a long time to develop the skills and then to ensure that people are able to have confidence when they invest in an industry. And the government has a responsibility to ensure the skills are available when the country needs them. This country needs them, not another country needs them. We've got to build for our own interests, not for other people's interests. And therefore, we've got to know what it is that we're doing. And that's why Parliament has to have a role in this. And the people of this country have got a right to know what they're signing up for.
Well, one of the big points of inquiry for a Parliament committee and for the Australian people, I think, be around the notion of what this means for a future nuclear industry for this company. The government says it hasn't yet selected the type of submarine it will buy, but whichever option it chooses, it will be nuclear powered, and the subs won't need to be refuelled or serviced during their life cycle of up to 30 years. The Prime Minister has assured us these subs won't be nuclear armed, and this doesn't mean the start of a civil nuclear industry. But do you think that is still an issue on the table? Because there are plenty of people who are already spruiking that it should mean that.
Well, there is an inevitability that we understand the nature of the new technologies, that we will need to develop the skills to repair them should they break down. There is yet to be developed a system that doesn't require repair. And we have to understand, even if it is a sealed system for the reactor, it is connected to turbines, to propellers, and to all the other systems on the boat. We'll need to develop the skills necessary to be able to repair that. That will invariably involve a much higher level of skills in dealing with radiation and dealing with nuclear technologies. We already have the technology in this country associated with the OPAL reactor and the synchrotron in Melbourne. So we do have a nuclear industry in this country. We need to upscale that dramatically to be able to meet it. We don't have enough people at the moment, nuclear physicists, to be able to run those facilities, let alone what we'll need to run the submariners for this facility and for all the other skills associated with it. The onshore skills that are necessary to sustain the vessels themselves. So these are the types of issues that will need to be examined. Now, a Senate Select Committee gets you across the portfolios, the foreign policy questions, the industry questions, all the other matters that relate to the skills and training that are associated with these types of major procurements. And I think one that could be done in a fairly short range is possible so that we can get the experts in, not just rely on questions asked by the members of parliament, but have proper submissions from people that actually know what they're about and provide us with advice to the parliament and then to the people of this country. So we're not just relied upon these closed door sessions of an 18-month task force, which has yet to define its terms of reference or the engagement with all the other technologies that this this new deal is supposed to be involved with.
Well, given that, was Anthony Albanese too hasty to sign Labor up to bipartisan support for the plan with caveats? He did attach caveats.
This is not about the Labor Party. The government has been trying to rush the Labor Party on these matters. These are fundamental questions that require answers. The government's provided a two-hour briefing without documentation, without a text to this agreement. It's made assertions as to what this arrangement involves. It has yet to explain what the implications are. We've seen the trade implications emerging. We've seen questions that are arising in regard to our neighbours. We're now beginning to understand the implications in terms of industry policy. There are many, many other questions yet to be examined. We're now told over the weekend the government's actually looking at leasing of boats. We may in fact be looking at the government quietly moving out to dump a whole shipbuilding plan in regard to submarines. Well, we'll need to know what the implications are for that, particularly in regard to our capacity to maintain our capabilities to repair our own vessels and to actually maintain vessels in the water to defend Australia.
Senator, just on that and just finally and briefly, we are out of time, but as we've been speaking, a few listeners have been writing in and pointing out that if a major power attacked Australia, of course we would be reliant on other nations, particularly the United States. So sovereign power for Australia is an unrealistic concept.
No, that's totally untrue. We need to be able to ensure that we act in our interest, not just in the interest of other people. We need to be able to ensure that we work, as I say, with other people, and the point that John Curtin made without any inhibitions of any kind back in December of 1941 was that we do work with other countries, but we do so on in our terms and in the capacity to look after our interests, not necessarily working solely at the beck and call of other people.
Kim Carr, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Kim Carr, veteran Labor MP, former industry minister in the Rudd-Gillard governments. And we did request an interview with the Foreign Minister, Maurice Payne, but we still haven't received a response.